Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's up, everybody? It's Lean Keys Real Talk here with another episode, not back with another episode, even though we did miss 2 weeks. It's all good. And I don't remember if we covered not the last card, not the card before that, but the card before that. I don't remember if we covered it. And if I were to really go back and look through each of those, even just look through each main card, we would probably need like 5 shows worth to try to backtrack all of it. So what we'll probably do is we'll go through Royval Moreno 2. So that might have been, you know, Moreno, Royval 3. I don't even know. All those guys have fought so many times. Yeah, we're going to go through that one. Hermanson Piper, we're going to go through that. Gaziev Rosenstrike, we're going to go through that. And then we will get into UFC 299, predictions, analysis, probably a couple of bets. Maybe I call out some of the props that I'm looking at. I haven't dug too much into it yet. I mean, I have dug into it, but as far as the props only come out on usually Wednesdays and Thursdays. I use DraftKings, so it seems to be Wednesdays and Thursdays. By Thursday, usually all of the props are out, and then you're good to go. And that's usually when I'm finalizing my bets, or at least try to be. But, yeah, maybe throw out a prop and or a couple props. There'll be more dropping tomorrow. Maybe I'll just tweet those out instead. But, yeah, I mean, I want to say this, and I have a feeling that when Lee gets in here, he's going to agree with me on these three guys, and three being pretty much guys getting exposed or guys just having a terrible night. And I don't even know if it's a terrible night. I don't even know what it is. But now that we're here, my co-host, Lee, what's up, bro?
Hey, what's going on, my man? Forgive my tardiness. My phone was doing a update, but hey, I'm here, man. I'm here. Let's get it. Big weekend.
It's all
big
good,
weekend
so.
Coming up.
It is a big weekend, so I want to get to that, but I know that, you know, we just missed 2 weeks, so I want to touch on the last two cards, and I don't think that we talked about not the last card or the one before that, but the one before that, which I'm pretty sure was Hermanson versus Joe Piper. I don't think we covered it, or at least covered the, because I'm pretty sure we didn't do predictions on it, because that's usually not one that we would do a prediction on. Usually, if we really like the fight night card, we'll do predictions on it, but that wasn't one that – there was some fights, but it wasn't something too crazy. We were probably talking about something else that week. But I'll just say this right now. I don't know if you watched that fight, but Joe Piper is an up-and-coming guy. I'm pretty sure he came off of Dana White Contender Series, and I'm pretty sure that was only his second fight in the UFC. I'm pretty sure he fought – Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, I think that was his first official UFC fight. And then in his second UFC, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure in his second UFC fight, they tried to shoot him all the way up into the rankings by having him fight Jack Hermanson in the main event, which I'm not going to try to be high and mighty here. I took the bait and I fell for it and I lost money because of it. But I thought, you know, Jack Hermanson, when's the last time we really saw Jack Hermanson look great? I mean, I haven't seen him be great in years, you know? When's the last time we've seen him fight and say, wow, Jack Hermanson just had a great performance? I don't remember the last time. It was probably like 4 years ago, maybe. Probably around that time, 4 or 5 years ago, last time that I said that. And the performance of his the last one that really stands out to me was, I think he fought Jacare. That was back when Jacare was still here. I'm pretty sure that was the last one where I was like, wow, Jack Hermanson, he looked good in that fight. But that was against pretty much Jacare Souza. So anyways, I took the bait, I fell for it, but then Hermanson pretty much took over the fight. Piper looked good in the first round. He looked tired in the second round. Overall, he was really only in the fight in the first 2 rounds. And then by round 3, he was completely out of the fight. And Jack Hermanson does one thing that he does do, and I will credit, is that Jack Manson's got a gas tank on him. That's one thing that he does have. Even if he looks bad in the fight, he will stay in the fight, and he's not going to burn out like a lot of these guys. Joe Pyfer likes to, you know, get guys out of there early. It goes to be, you know, your own downfall when you fight Jack Manson, that starts to kick it up a notch when he knows you're tired in round 3, 4, 5, and that's what we saw in that main event. And Jack Manson just pretty much dominated him in rounds 3, 4, 5 and won a decision, and he was like a pretty big underdog. Did you see that fight?
No, I didn't see that fight, but that was Piper's fourth fight in the UFC, and he was on
a
three-fight winning streak. Yeah, that was his fourth fight in the UFC after competing in the Contender Series. But I'm kind of with you. I think the UFC may have put a rocket to his back too fast by having him fight Hermanson. Hermanson is a guy that he's kind of reminds me of Neil Magny a little bit. Every time you want to count him out, he'll come and grab a big win. And you'll be like, where did that come from? And I think that's what happened with the Piper fight. It's like, okay, Hermanson, you know, maybe the UFC giving Piper some favorable matchups, you know, to keep the rocket attached to his back. But like you said, man, Hermanson, one thing about him is he's never out of a fight because his cardio is so good. And a guy like that, especially in a five-round fight, and I think that was Piper, he first-round knockout, and he had a second-round knockout. So, and to put him in a five-round main event against that guy, that was a setup for failure for him.
It was Gaziev that I was thinking of, was to go to the main event and only the second UFC fight, which we're going to get to that. Shamil Gaziev, we're going to get to that here shortly. And I'll tell you about him, too, if you didn't know who he was or if you didn't see it. I'll tell you about it because your boy Keys be watching every single card nowadays. I got to watch every card. If I don't watch the card, you know, my whole being is off. You know what I mean? I got to watch it. It doesn't matter if nobody's on the card and they hate the card. Guess what? I'm still watching it. I need those fights.
And that's funny because if y'all don't follow my man Keys on Twitter, boy, he was really lit up last week about, you know, certain cards and stuff like that. Hey, he was real lit up last week. So if y'all don't follow him, you might want to follow us because it was a spirited discussion last week.
Yeah, and I could definitely go into that. I might as well go into that. Actually, you know what? Let's hold that real quick. That's a perfect thing. Let me just touch. I'm going to touch on these two main events. I want to go into that, and then we'll go into UFC 299. That's how we're going to go. Bang, bang, boom. That's how we're going to do it. So, Hermanson pretty much exposed Joe Pyfer in a way. Joe Pyfer, you got to, you know, they probably rush him to the top too quick. You got to work in his cardio. Probably no five-round fight for any time, you know, for him anytime soon. Not even just because he doesn't deserve it. I mean, it's not even just that. It's just he got to work on his game a little bit before I even want to see him in another five-round fight. You know what I mean? Because that was just, I mean, not only did he lose me money, he lost, you know, tons of people money. But not even just that. Even without the money, forget the bets. Forget that. You
have to work your way into five-round fights. You got to work your way into a five-round fight. This guy's never been out of the second round. And you can put him in a five-round fight. That just don't make no sense. I get you, though.
So he got to work his way back to the point where I even would want to see him in a five-round fight. Like I said, forget the bet. I don't even care about that. I like that guy. You know what I mean? I like Joe Pyfer because you know one thing I like about Joe Pyfer, bro? And I think you'll appreciate this. I like that he reps, he's prideful of the United States. You know? You see him with the American flag. He's a prideful guy. and I like to see that. He's one of the only guys that I can really name. I know Michael Chandler does it a little bit too, and Kobe Covington does it, but you know his way is a little bit different. So we'll put him off to the side. But Joe Pfeiffer, I like that he's prideful of his country. You know, I think that's cool. I love to see everybody. You know, man, UFC no shows. I love them with the Mexico flag, Brazil flag. I want to see everybody be that way of where they come from. You know what I mean? So I just like to see that Joe Pfeiffer does it. You know what I mean? Because you don't really see a lot of fighters that they, you know, they rep their country or they don't, or they're from, or they were born in the States, but you just don't see them with the American flag. You don't really see them sporting the American flag. So, I just like his mentality. I've watched his interviews and I like his story. You know, that dude came from, you know, a tough spot, and he rose up, and now, you know, it must feel really surreal for him, even just having lost in a main event, to even say that he was in a UFC main event to himself must feel crazy. You know, that's a huge accomplishment, even in a loss. You know, he can go back and work on it and come back better. You know, but it's from where he, you know, you come from, and to get to that spot is, you know, you're on one of the biggest stages there is. Hey, the lights are too bright, but they won't always be too bright, you know. It is what it is. You know, we need to see him, like, go into some third rounds. You know, I need to see, like, 3 full rounds of work from him a couple times before I would even want to see him in a 5 round, you know. I want to see him get, like, some third round stoppages or just go to some decisions. You know, I want to see him look like he's still, you know, I want to see him look like Dustin Poirier when he's in the, you know what I mean? Like, look, Dustin Poirier, round 3, yeah, you know, he might have a little bit less output, maybe, but Dustin Poirier, you could tell he's still ready to go in round 3. Max Holloway, you can still tell he's ready to go in round 3. Volkanovski, all these guys, obviously they're much lower in weight than Joe Pfeiffer, so maybe it's harder to do that. That's a fair take, but still, if you're going to fight 5 rounds, you're going to have to be able to do that. You know what I mean? So, moving on. The other one that I want to get to, and I have a feeling you did watch this one, and I think I want to ask you what you thought first. Our boy Brandon Moreno, man. What happened? Oh, my God. He hurt my feelings so bad. He hurt my feelings. And you know why he hurt my feelings, too? Was because Brandon Royval, Brandon Royval wasn't doing anything. You know what I mean? Like, you have times where, like, okay, guys had a bad night, but then, like, this guy looked really good. No, Brandon Royval didn't look really good. That's the thing. Like, he didn't look really good. Like, that was a beatable man. You know what I mean? Like, to me, I feel like Royval was very beatable that night. Look at his percentage. They said he landed the most he attempted the second most strikes ever behind Max Holloway. But I had to remind them. I'm like, bro, you're talking about a guy landing at like 20-something percent of those strikes, and you're comparing that to Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar, where he landed like 40-something or 50-something percent of the strikes. It's like, what do you mean? That's two different performances. You know, they're like, oh, you know, second most strikes ever attempted in a fight. It's like attempted. What about actually landing?
Man, that fight, man, I got to put it to you like this. I watched the fight. And I'm watching Moreno, man. I just didn't like the way he was throwing his punches that night. Everything was wild, long, and wide. And whenever you're long, wild, and wide, and somebody is countering you, it makes them look better than they're really looking because you're making it easy for them to look good. And that's what Moreno was doing. Every time he would go for a big shot, you could see it coming a mile away. And it reminded me of the Bobby Whitaker, Israel Adesanya first fight, when Bobby came in there throwing punches that were wild and wide, and Izzy was just countering them. And I was like, yo, Moreno, just slow down. Just slow down a tad bit. Because I even went to, after the main event, I tweeted, and I quote, "Didn't like the way Moreno was throwing punches tonight, wild and long, which opened him up to be encountered by Royval. In my opinion, Royval looked better tonight and deserved a win, but I should have put in there, the way Moreno fought made him look better, and that got him the win. I should have put that in there, but, man, I just didn't like the way Moreno looked. And then he didn't try any takedowns. He just basically made it a stand-up fight. And I just didn't like his game plan, bro. And but I have to say, Keys, that card there, one thing I learned about the Mexican fighters that night, they win when they on the mat. Do not think because you take a Mexican fighter down that you have gained an advantage. Every time one of them guys back hit the mat, they were immediately going for submissions, changing positions. I was so impressed with them guys, man. I was just like, whoa. Man, I was really, I don't know what it is about the Inoche cards and where the UFC been hiding some of these dudes, but I was thoroughly impressed with the ground game with most of those guys during that fight card. I just have to throw that out there. I know you wasn't happy with Moreno, and you sound like you wasn't happy with Roval either, man. So what was your takeaway from that fight?
And I want to say, too, that when we did our year-end show, do you remember what my event of the year was in 2023?
Noche.
UFC Noche, man. I'm telling you, those are the best cards. I love the Mexican fighters, the Mexican crowd. I love everything. When you go over there, it's like, and you know what's crazy is that UFC Noche was actually, I'm pretty sure that was in Vegas, but like you could have fooled me that it wasn't in Vegas, you know, because you could tell that this is a Mexico crowd, you know. You could tell, like, the people came out. You know, the people came out to Vegas, which, like, makes sense. You know, that makes sense. Like, people came out in heavy, you know, and Noche, yeah, I thought best of 2023. And then, you know, that card was basically UFC Noche 2, if you ask me. They just didn't call it that, which I think, you know, that could even be its own series of cards. And I'm surprised Dana White's not trying to do that. And then the Sphere, you know, he's trying to do he's going to do the Sphere in Vegas. And that's supposed to be UFC Noche, but they're calling it UFC 306. I'm like, man, why are you disguising the UFC Noche as a pay-per-view number? Do a separate card if you're going to do it like that. Don't do that. Like, don't hide UFC Noche behind 306. Don't nobody care about 306.
Make it his own series. Make it his own series. You have Noche 1, Noche. Yeah, you ain't even got to have a 1 or 2. Just, Noche, you know, just keep have a Noche. You don't have to name it or number it. You ain't got to hide it behind a number. Man, come on, man.
Well, this they're trying to disguise it, you know, because Dana White said that was the next UFC Noche was at the Sphere. He said he was going to bring UFC Noche to the Sphere because it's in September. That was the whole thing, was that it's on Mexican Independence Day. That's the whole reason why it is, because UFC Noche, this past one, was on Mexican Independence Day. That's the whole significance of that time of year. And then now this the Sphere is booked for Mexican Independence Day, but now it's not called UFC Noche. It's called UFC 306. And I'm like, bro, like, why are they doing that? Like, you know, it's like, don't put it to – just because you brought it to the Sphere, it's like, okay, now you want it to be a pay-per-view card. But the funny thing is about that is that UFC Noche was better than all your pay-per-view cards in 2023. It was arguably better than all your pay-per-view cards in UFC it was arguably better than all the pay-per-view cards – better than every card in 2023, including all the – arguably better. You know, people disagree with that. That's okay. You can disagree with that. But I'm saying it's arguably better than every pay-per-view in 2023. So I feel like he brought it there. And now he's like, okay, now since we're at the Sphere, we got to do it as big as possible, which I respect. But don't snub UFC Noche just because it's going to be like, man, I don't appreciate that, man. That really brought me the wrong way when I saw that. I really don't like that because it's you're taken away from what it was supposed to be by doing that. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
Anyways, Banner Royval. Let me look this up real quick. I want to just tell you. Banner Royval, he was beatable, man. I was not impressed. That was nothing. Because look at this. Tell me this. Would that Brandon Royval beat the Moreno we saw versus Pantoja?
No.
Because the thing that Moreno was doing that I don't usually see him do, you could tell me if I'm bugging, if he does do this, and I'm not remembering. But since when does he, like, walk forward, like, ducking his head and, like, throws, like, these, like, wide punches like that? Like, since when does he do that? That was, like, all he was doing in that fight. Where was the jab? Like, Moreno is usually, like, much more open, like, than that. He doesn't, like, walk forward, like, covering his face, like, kind of in, like, the shell and, like, throwing these big, like, wide punches. Does he always, like, when has he done that?
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, I was stunned watching the fight, bro.
I'm hating on Royval. That's okay. I just want y'all to know that total strikes, he landed 177 to Moreno's 119. Brandon Royval landed 177 out of 556 strikes, total strikes attempted. You know, so he's like, I don't even know what that number is. Like, he's like 20-something percent probably. Yeah, they were saying that second to Max Holloway's performance versus Calvin Gaethje, but we're not doing that. Cause I'm pretty sure Max attempted like 800 and something strikes and landed like 400 or 500. So, yeah, we're not doing that, bro. You're not comparing that with that one. You know, no, Brandon, no, he's not. No, he's not. So, Brandon Royval was very beatable. I think if the Moreno from his last fight, when he fought Pantoja at UFC 290, would easily beat that Brandon Royval, easily. Because first Pantoja, he was using everything. He was using every weapon that he has. You know, he was doing a little bit of everything. He was using his full striking. This one, for some reason, he's just doing that same tactic. He's, like, walking forward with his hands blocking. You know what I mean? He's walking forward, like, in defense mode. Like, I've never seen him fight like that. He was in defense mode. I've never seen Moreno. He's never like that. He's usually, like, you know, he's usually super open. Like, yeah, he's open to getting hit, but he's also hitting you with, like, everything he has, you know? It seemed like that fight, he was, like, super limited in that fight, you know? That's the word I would put to it. Like, it seemed like for some reason, like, he was only throwing, like, certain types of shots, and he wasn't throwing, like, his usual volume, you know? It was really weird.
But you know what was also really weird, though? The co-main event was really weird. Yair versus T-City, how Yair came out and the way he was fighting. I was like, yo, Yair looked really good. And he just abandoned the whole game plan the rest of the fight. It's like, man, what are you? Keys, I was so mad watching that fight, bro. But I was so happy for Brian Ortega, man. But I was just frustrated with Yair, bro. I don't know what happened with Yair and Moreno that night, man. They both just looked totally different. They both looked different to me that night.
Yeah, Yair, I'm looking at the card back. This was such a good card, bro. Felipe Dos
Santos. Yeah, buddy, yeah.
Yo, Felipe Dos Santos, I just got to shout him out on the show. Felipe, I like that guy. I like Felipe Dos Santos, man. He reminds me of Oliveira. Reminds me of Oliveira with just a little bit less, you know what I mean? He doesn't have as many weapons. He hasn't shown us that much. We've only seen him in two fights, but I like Felipe Dos Santos, that guy. I was surprised that he got that decision. I did have a bet on him, so I was obviously happy, but I was surprised. But then when I looked on Twitter, a lot of people had him winning. A lot of people said he was winning. Yeah, see, it wasn't like I wasn't scoring the rounds, but, like, I just felt like, depending on what kind of judges that we had, which I didn't know, I was like, okay, this is only the second fight of the night, like, you know, in each state, each country, you pretty much have, like, either damage judges or control judges, You know, when they go to Abu Dhabi, it seems like, you know, sometimes you get control judges, you know, which makes sense because a lot of, you know, it's out in Abu Dhabi. I mean, a lot of the fighters, they have styles where that would, you know, it kind of caters to them if you have those judges. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to accuse anybody, though. I'm just saying, you know, you're in Abu Dhabi, you know, you get the control judges. But in other places, it depends where you are. You know, you get the damage judges, and I think that is probably what we have this time because Felipe Dos Santos was landing the better damage, and I want to say he might have even had more strikes, but Altamirano was just had the control. You know, Altamirano was, you know, Felipe Dos Santos would throw a shot, and it was bothering me so much because, like, Felipe Dos Santos, you know, this is just – I feel like this is just like a – I don't want to call him a rookie, but, like, just like a guy – you know, the lack of experience, I feel like. Like, he came forward throwing a shot, and then every time Altamirano would duck the shot and take him down, I'm like, bro, you keep letting him do that to you, you know? Like,
over and over and over.
It was like he did it so many times. That was the biggest thing in that fight that was bothering me. I'm like, bro, he keeps doing that to you. He's done that to you over and over. Like, you're not thinking about the takedown now. You know, it's like you're not like – halfway in and halfway out, like, okay, you're striking, but, like, you're also wary that he's going to shoot because that's really all he could do. Like, he wasn't going to be able to – Felipe Dos Santos is dangerous hands. He wasn't just going to stand in front of you. But it's just crazy that kept happening over and over. He got to work on that. But, yeah, I like Felipe Dos Santos. Manuel Torres is another guy. You probably saw him tweeting about Manuel Torres. I like him. He got a submission in that fight, and I thought he was going to get the KO, but he went for a first-round submission. So I watched some tape on Chris Duncan before that fight, and that's why I thought he was going to – you know, I thought Torres was going to knock him out. Torres has power, and Chris Duncan fought the other dude, Chris Campbell, who just knocked out Dominic Reyes' brother in his last fight. And – yo, I got to send you the clip. Like, Chris Duncan, he got knocked down four times. They were fighting on the Contender Series. And then he comes back and KOs Campbell while he was rocked. It was so crazy. It was like the fourth time he was knocked down in the fight. You're like, all right, this guy's about to get finished. And then he gets the finish while he was on chicken legs. I was like, yo, what is going on? That is crazy. But... yes, another one, Zell Huber, Yair Rodriguez. I don't know what Yair Rodriguez was thinking, bro. He was destroying T-City on the feet in the first round, and then for some reason decides to try to, like, play jiu-jitsu with a guy who trains with the Gracies. I don't know why he thought that was a good thing to do. That fight, almost, those are the types of moments in fights where, like, people say that it's fixed. And, like, I'm not really going to argue it because it's weird how things like that happen. It's like, why would you think to change your game plan? Like, you were smoking him on the feet. What would make you change up in round two? You know, and then you go to the mat with Ortega, who you know will choke you out. You know it. You know, you know you're not beating him on the mat. So why did you bring the fight there? Like, it just seems so weird. You know what I mean? That was so weird.
That's what I was saying, bro. Because what I want to say that when the judges' scorecards came out, one judge had a 10-8 Yair first round, and then in the second round they had an Ortega 10-8 in the second round. And I'm sitting here, and I'm like, did you not learn anything from the second round that you don't want to wrestle with this guy? He almost submitted you in the second round. I just didn't understand it, bro. I just didn't understand it at all. But one thing that came out of this card is a fight I want to see. I want to see Zell Huber versus Torres, man. I want to see if they're in the same division. If they're in the same division, yep, they both lightweights. I want to see these two guys go at it. Put them in a fight night main event, and I'm all for it. Because both of these guys can go. Both of them are nice. And, yeah, man, give me Zell Huber versus Torres next. Man, I am all for that fight and make it a main event. Or put it on the Noche card as a co-main event, whatever you want to do. Let these two guys get their shine, and I think they'll put on a hell of a fight.
I'm down for that one. I'm definitely down.
Yeah.
The next thing I want to get to is this card was phenomenal, so I could talk about it all day. The thing that I want to get to, and I want to touch on what you asked me about, was Shamil Gaziev was 12-0. Shamil Gaziev is a Dagestani heavyweight. He was a student of Khabib's father, Abdulmanap Nurmagomedov. He was a student of Abdulmanap, and that had me, you know, that made me think, you know, we got clipped on that one too. We got clipped on that one too. And that was the one when I said Piper was his second fight in the UFC. That was Gaziev's second fight in the UFC. That's where I got it confused. And they had him fight Rosenstrike, who, when you look at that fight from, you know, a mile away, you could look at that fight from 10 miles away and see what, like, you could see the outcome, but it didn't go that way. You know what I mean? It's like you have a guy, Gaziev, who, heavyweight that can wrestle and strike versus Rosenstrike, who's really a kickboxer who cannot wrestle. If you take him down, you will likely dominate him, and you could probably finish him very quickly. And that didn't happen at all. That didn't happen at all, bro. The fight was like, what is going on? You know, like, Rosenstrike was not letting it go to the mat. He was stopping the takedowns easily. And then he was just blasting. Gaziev had, like, the first round, and then he was tired. And then they literally went five rounds, which is so bizarre. And Rosenstrike wins. And such a big – for heck, exactly. And Rosenstrike wins the decision. And he was another big underdog for that one. The underdogs have been winning this year, man. That's what makes me worried about O'Malley this weekend, bro. The underdogs, yo, it's 2-5 in the first seven main events of the year. Only two of the first seven pay-per-view main event favorites have won.
Well, in a way, it should be like that because the level of competition between the guys or the girls in the main event is normally pretty equal, you know, because it should be the best of the best fighting each other in the main event. It should be close to basically a pick'em, if you ask me, but it all depends on, you know, the fights or whatever. I think Rosenstrike, man, they asked him who he wanted to fight next, and then he kind of slyly said, y'all know who, and basically I won't think he want to fight Derek Lewis next. Rosenstrike, man, you really don't want the problems, bro. I know Derek Lewis is stylistically a better matchup for you, but I don't think – you might want to keep fighting these up-and-comers, man. But, you know, man, one thing about heavyweights, all it takes is one shot. I'm looking at the stats for this fight. Gaziev wasn't even active, really, in five rounds. And four rounds through 75 significant strikes. I mean, total strikes. He only threw 75, whereas Rosenstrike threw 230. And then Rosenstrike had 19 leg kicks. Gaziev only had one. Nah, that ain't going to get it done, bro. And like you said, anybody who watched Rosenstrike fight know that he doesn't want to go to the mat because he can't get back to his feet. Why would you implore a more of a wrestling-based attack? I see that because he landed one or seven takedowns, but for that one takedown, he had four and a half minutes of control. You couldn't do anything in 4.5 minutes against this guy? Come on, bro. 4.5 minutes and you couldn't submit Rosenstrike. Man, go ahead, man. But this card, I mean, it was good to see Nurmagomedov back. I don't know why Alex Perez still in the UFC. Tyson Pedro retired. This card really was kind of lackluster, but it's the reason that you have fight nights is because you want to get to know some of these up and coming fighters, man. If you look at everybody on the prelims basically had all finishes. 1, 2, 3, 4. Four out of the six fights ended in finishes. So, yeah, man. It's just a weird year so far, as far as what you said, 2-5. Man, that's kind of weird, but it's the cream of the crop. Find the cream of the crop. We'll see how it goes for the rest of the year. But hey, it starts all over this weekend.
Yeah, and speaking of submissions, you did mention how many submissions there were on the UFC Noche card, the Moreno Boys out too. I was sitting there at my apartment with my boy, and I'm like, yo, everybody is throwing up submissions. This is crazy. It's like not even just one a fight. Like, there's multiple submission attempts a fight. It's crazy. I'm like, every fighter is trying to get a submission. Like, I told my boy, I was like, yo, first of all, this is the most submission attempts I've ever seen on one card by a long shot. The most. That was crazy. Most submission attempts I've ever seen. And then, two, I told my boy, I was like, yo, I think Dana White low-key got an incentive out there. I think he told the whole roster that's on this card about getting a submission that night, bro. He must have told them something backstage. He's like, yo, whoever can get the best submission, you know what I mean, extra 100K or something on the fight check, you know. It makes me think that there was something like that behind the scenes. There was something going on because every fighter was going for submissions, bro. It was crazy. Like, even in moments where you're like, okay, he doesn't need to go for another submission there. Like, he could bring this fight back, you know, back on the feet, like, you know, he has good striking. He go for another submission attempt. I'm like, bro,
yep.
I swear, something is up, man. I think Dana put 100 racks up, and he put it backstage, and he's like, whoever impresses me with the coolest submission of the night, extra 100K, win or lose. Yeah, exactly. Win or lose, whatever. Yeah. That must have happened.
Because even the American girl, Sam Hughes, even though she was losing the fight, when she almost put Yasmin in a she almost caught her in a triangle. I was like, yo, is she gonna pull this off? And Yasmin slipped out of it, but man, she was close to getting submitted. Man, it was a crazy night, man. Hey, man, it was a crazy night as far as like mat game work during that card. And I tweeted that out, man. I was like, whoa, these guys ain't messing around tonight on the mat.
And to touch on what you asked me about, or what I was talking about last week, was I was basically going back and forth with this guy and, you know, big arguments with people on Twitter. And all I was trying to say was that Tony Moicano was saying, he did a video saying that, like, you know, the quality of the cards has been bad, and it's like, bro. And my response was, leave everybody that's saying that. You know what I mean? Like, I think some people really feel that way, and some of the cards, but I just lean more towards that when people say that, they're not saying that the card is bad. I feel like when they say it's bad, that's why I was asking guys, like, what do you mean when you say the card was bad? Like, what about it was bad? And the reason why I was asking was not because I want to know every detail of somebody's opinion, but because I was trying to extract the reason that I was trying to draw out. I was trying to draw out what I wanted people to say because I know what they wanted to say. You know what I mean? They wanted to say that they don't know the fighters, so the card was bad. That's what they wanted to say. That's what everybody doesn't, they won't state it clearly, but that's what they mean. A lot of these people, that's what they mean when they say that. When they say, like, oh, that card sucks. Well, does it actually suck? Because I watched that card that you said sucks, and that card was awesome. I really enjoyed that card. There was actually quite a few really good fights on that card. So did it really suck, or did you just look at it? You didn't recognize a lot of the names on it, which that's what happens. You have to not recognize them before you can watch them once and then recognize them. That happens with any fighter. There was a time when he wasn't a household name, and we had no idea. Dustin Poirier was one of those unknown names on a prelim card. Same thing with Brandon Moreno. Same thing with Brandon Royval. Same thing with Volkanovski. Same thing with all these guys. You know what I mean? There's only a few guys that will get launched up to a main card, and even then you don't know who they are. Even then you don't know who they are. So when Gaethje came over, I remember saying, like, man, who the hell is Gaethje? They found this dude Gaethje, bro. Like, I was saying that. I was saying that to my boy. I'm like, yo, we got Michael Johnson versus Gaethje. And that was a guy that I had didn't – you don't know them until you know them is what I'm trying to say. Conor McGregor was once a nobody. Max Holloway was once a nobody. Ngannou was once a nobody. All these guys were once those fighters that when you look at the card at a glance, you don't recognize – you don't know the name. But what happens once you watch them once? Now you know the name. You know what I mean? And then what happens later? They build up, and then now they're your favorite fighter, and you have a picture on your wall, or I have a canvas on my wall of that fighter. You know, and that's, you know them. You get to know them by getting to know them. You know what I mean? You watch the fight, and then now you know them. It's just like Manuel Torres. Like, Manuel Torres could very well be one of these guys in, like, two years. Even like a year, 2 years, Manuel Torres, we're talking about him now being one of the first fights of the night. He could be on the pay-per-view in like a year, year and a half. He might be one of these guys that, like a Poirier, you know what I mean? He might be like, I'm not saying he's the next Poirier. I'm just saying that he could be, we could be looking back at him in that same light. You know what I'm saying? Look at Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley's the defending champion. Look at the pictures of him when he was a nobody, and he looked like McLovin. You know, Sean O'Malley used to look like McLovin, and now Sean O'Malley is the defending champion, headlining UFC 299. You know, probably one of the most stacked cards we've ever seen. But he was a nobody. He was just he was somebody you didn't know on Dana White Contender Series, and then he got a buzz from people watching him. That's all I was just trying to say.
Yeah, I just think, especially now that people can bet on sports, it's like the more you get to know these fighters, the more you deep dive into who the fighters are and, you know, what they do, it makes you a more informed better. But putting the betting aside, it makes you a better fan of the sport because you're not – like having to go do a YouTube video search to see what this guy looked like. You know, you have to go and do a search of a record. I mean, you kind of – me and Key's been doing this for a while. We've been doing this for a while. And I know that there's been plenty of fighters that we grew up with coming from early through the ranks. Izzy was one of them. Izzy was one of the guys – that me and Key seen a fight, and we was like, yo, this guy going to be a champion. We followed Izzy from the first time he came to UFC to him being a superstar. Like nowadays, Phil Rowe and Blanchfield, I've been into them girls since the first time I seen them fight. I think when Phil Rowe fought, I was like, Keys, man, who is that? And we was on our little group chat, and I was like, bro, I think she got something to be a champion. Look, her and Blanchfield about to, I want to say, nah, Fierro about to, she about to fight Rose, right? I think she going to fight Rose, I think. So Man,
no,
he just got it.
No, Fiero just beat Rose in her last fight. Fiero and Blanchfield are about to fight, but then Rose is Rose is fighting, one of my girls, man. What's her name? Amanda
Hebos.
Amanda Hebos, man, in the main event. Ooh!
Yeah. And then another one of our girls, man, she leaves the UFC to go to PFL, man, Talia Santos, man. She leaves the UFC to sign with PFL, man. I couldn't believe that. But, yeah, you just got to – yeah, it was on – I saw it on ESPN the other day. But, you know, you just got to give a fight night a chance. You know, you got to go in there with open mind. You can't go in there with the mindset of – who is this nobody? Why am I watching all these nobodies fight? These nobodies are going to one day be the somebodies. But you got to grow with them. Just can't judge them based off the number of fights they got or whatever. Give them a chance. But, you know, Keys, man, what, we down to what, about 15 minutes, man? You ready to keep driving at 299?
I understand that mentality, too, because I used to think the same way. I used to be that kind of fan, so I get it. And what you said about the betting, this is my last thing, absolutely true. So put the betting aside, the betting has made me more research ever done on probably anything. Like, I literally do so much analysis on these fighters, and I look at everything. You know, I just told you I was watching tape of that dude Chris Duncan, who Manuel Torres just fought. I was watching one of the Duncan's fights from Dana White Contender Series so I could get an understanding for the fight that we just watched. Yeah, it makes you, you know, yeah, you people want to know so you can bet, but then the betting actually makes you a better fan, and it has. I've never been more of a fan than I am right now. You know, I've become, it's made me so passionate because it makes you appreciate what you're watching. You know, when you can go into it and put the best out, get the best, you can go into it with knowledge of who you're about to watch. That makes you already, at least for me, that makes me interested before I even know them. Because you already kind of, you get like a scope of them. You know what I mean? It's like this dude, Robelis Despain is, I don't know if you know about this. I bet you do know about this. This guy, Robelis Despain, and we're – look, this is me transitioning to 299. See how I did that? This guy, Robelis Despain, is 4-0. He only has 4 pro fights and very much like Ngannou vibes, you know? Same thing as when Ngannou came in. It was like this dude's just getting all these crazy knockouts in these, like, lower promotions, and now he's coming in, and now this is his debut fight. He's only 4-0, you know, not a lot of experience. But I've watched his highlights, and I watched him months ago. I've known about this guy. You know, I knew about him months ago. And before I even knew the UFC was signing him, I saw his footage going viral of his knockouts. This dude has like a 3-second knockout. They said his last 3 fights, Lee, combined add up to 18 seconds of octagon time, of ring time.
Damn.
So, like, do we know if he's going to be a fish out of water on the mat? No, we don't. But we do know that he's got power in his hands from what we've seen. So, me going into it, Despain is not a nobody that I don't know because I've been watching his highlights, you know, for months. I saw his footage months ago. And then later on down the line, they're like, oh, UFC just signed. Bro, they signed him, like, during his last fight, Dana White signed him. I think it was like while he was fighting, Dana White signed him.
Yeah, then he's fighting a guy that's lost 3 of his last 4 fights, 3 of his last 5 fights. So, yeah, I would probably 1, 2, 3, 4. He's lost 4 of his last 6. So, yeah, they evidently they see something in him. Like you said, he only had 19 seconds of cage time in his last 3 fights. So we shall see. But some UFC lights shine kind of different, though.
And that's the thing. Like, they're pretty much giving him to me, like, they're giving Josh Parisian, like, very, you know, this is, like, low-level heavyweight here. Like, this guy doesn't do anything very good. I mean, like, this is one of the lower-level guys. Shout-out to the MMA guru. Shout-out to MMA guru. Ali, I don't know if you've ever seen MMA guru clips on Twitter. The dude's a pretty big account. He kind of has some wild takes. But shout-out to MMA guru because I've been watching this stuff. And you know what he said last night, Lee? I'm watching the MMA guru's breakdown of the card, right? And he says this. He goes, he's breaking down that fight, and he goes, you look at some of these heavyweights. He's like, you look at some of these heavyweights, and some of these guys, they just make you want to go on a run. They make you want to just go on a run, fight up until the top 10, and then just never fight again.
Wow.
I'm like, yo, he's saying is like, these dudes are so bad. Like, the lower half of, like, the heavyweight division is so terrible that it's like you probably could train and just get in there and beat a lot of these dudes. And you could literally go on a run. You could go on, like, a five-fight win streak just getting in there with these guys. These dudes are terrible. It's really bad, you know?
Yeah, as long as you don't get hit.
Yeah, no, exactly. Let's see this. We're about to speed run this card, bro. How's this? We're gonna. You guys come 9:05.
Yeah.
9:05. All right. So we're gonna put another 5 minutes on the clock. Lee, go ahead. I know you're up in the skybox, yo. Add another 5 minutes to our clock.
I'm ready, bro.
Lee just queued up another five minutes from up in the control panel. So here we go. We're about to speed run this card. Here we go. We're about to pull up this full card. 2 seconds. I like to go to MMAfighting.com because those guys, like, have the whole thing. You can get it on one page. Shout out MMAfighting.com. I like the way they put the card together. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. It's just, like, not coming up for me at all. Okay. This fight, this thing is so stacked that, like, we really don't even know how to speedrun this. all right, here we go. Early prelim. I don't even know how to speedrun this because there's so many good fights. Okay, so early prelim, Joanne Calderwood versus Marina Moroz. I think we'll go ahead and skip that one. We don't really need to talk about that. CJ Vergara versus Asu Almabayev. I think we'll go ahead and skip that one. Let's start right here. Let's go. We just went Robeles Despain versus Josh Parisian. We were just talking about it. You want to hear a stat, too. I think he said he's 35 or he's 36, and he was the same age as Yoel Romero. They said the last time, I think it was an undefeated fighter. I think it was the last time an undefeated fighter, 35 years of age, light heavyweight enough, made his debut, was Yoel Romero with, like, a highlight reel knockout, and now this is the next time for Robeles Despain, even though it's at heavyweight and Yoel is at middleweight. Was it light? Yeah,
yeah.
He's at middleweight.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. Despain, I think, is going to KO this guy.
Yeah, and he has an 87-inch reach. Oh, my God. He's 6'7 with an 87-inch reach.
The dude's crazy. He could be an absolute machine. I'm scared, but. Yeah, I got him early. I think first round KO, this guy.
Yeah, I think this one ends quickly, and I think Parisian. Yeah, this one is going to end quickly and violently. Yeah, I don't think Parisian has a chance. 87-inch reach, 6'7". Yeah, man.
All right, let's jump up here. That's only the early prelims, bro. There's so many fights on this. I thought we were in the main there's literally five early prelims. Okay. So we got Moonhost versus Kyler Phillips. Moonhost is the underdog in that fight.
Yeah, Moonhost fell off, man.
Yeah, that one. You know, I think that one, bro, for a pick, I'm gonna take Munoz by decision, bro. I think Munoz. I think he's got the cardio. I think if Kyle Phillips come out fast, kind of burn himself out. I think Pedro Munoz, who has never been finished, will win down the stretch. First underdog of the prelims.
I'm taking Phillips, man, via submission, man. I'm going to go on Phillips, man, second round submission, bro.
Now how about this one? We got Mateus Gamrot versus RDA. This one's easy for me. This is easy. I got Gamrot.
I'm going Gamrot.
I think Gamrot. Yeah, Gamrot's the younger guy. RDA, bro, I mean, bro, he plus 275 on the dog for a reason. This guy, RDA, you know, he's getting older. I think he's like 36. He keeps switching between 155 and 170. Like every other fight, he's like going up and then going down. So he doesn't know what division he wants to be in. And Mateus Gamrot's committed to 155. He's a beast. I feel like this is one of the best 155ers. I think he should beat RDA pretty easily. I'm going to go Gamrot by decision.
Yeah, I got Gamrot winning this fight, too. RDA is tough. I don't think Gamrot can get him up out of there. I'm going to say Gamrot wins by unanimous decision in this fight. RDA is pushing 40. I like Gamrot in this fight.
Next one we got, this is actually Caitlin Chookagan, who looks like she's changed her name. I don't know if she got married or something. But that's Caitlin Chookagan versus Macy Barber. Who you like in that one?
Man, that's a tough one, bro. Because one thing about Macy, if she can get you to the ground, it's a wrap. But she's been trying to stand and bang here lately. But I think she's going to control the fight on the mat. I'm going to go Macy Barber, man. I'm going to say Macy Barber split decision against a very game Caitlin Sermonara, formerly Chookagan. I like Macy Barber in this fight.
I'm going to go Chookagan. I think Chookagan, you know, probably if I had to bet it, I don't really know what I would do. I haven't got that far. But, yeah, I'm going to take Chookagan. I just like the way that she fights at distance. I think she can keep the fight at distance and just kind of, you know, pick her shot, you know, kind of pick her shots for Macy Barber and, you know, edge out a decision in a close fight. That's what I see happening there. But I wouldn't be surprised. I think that one can go either way. I do think decision, you know, is fair either way. I don't see a finish there, but, yeah, I'll take Chookagan for the sake of the pick. Next one, we got Curtis Blaydes versus Gelson Almeida. This is another easy one for me. Gelson Almeida wins this fight all day. Justin Almeida was a bigger favorite on the original booking of this fight, and then something happened, and then the fight fell through, and that's when Almeida ended up fighting Derek Lewis a couple months ago, and I think people just kind of changed their tune on Almeida when he got, like, 24 minutes of control time versus Derek Lewis. They thought that, like, he's just, like, a lay-and-pray fighter, and, like, you know, people think he's, like, not as good now. But he's better. He's going to beat Curtis Blaydes, bro. Curtis Blaydes, I'll say one thing, and I said this on the timeline, and I tagged you, and I screenshotted it. Curtis Blaydes always folds in his big fights, man. Every time he has a big fight, he folds. Not only do I think Almeida is a beast and a future champion, and that he just would beat Curtis Blaydes, but it's not even that. Curtis Blaydes be beating himself.
Yeah.
Beating himself, man. He always does versus Terry Lewis. Beat himself versus Ngannou twice. Beat himself. Even versus Tom Aspinall. Imagine this. He was winning the fight versus Tom Aspinall. But even in a fight where he was winning and he looked really good, he knocked Aspinall into a position where Blaydes looked good to where he knocks Aspinall into a position where he sustains a freak injury, which ends up making the fight I don't know if it was like a doctor stoppage TKO or it was a no contest. I don't even know what happened, but I feel like that was even a fold. That was a four-dimensional fold. Curtis Blaydes even be folding when he wins the fight, because we know that when you get that, it kind of puts an asterisk on it, you know, at least for me. It's like, okay, he beat Aspinall, but did he really finish him? Not really, because Aspinall fell, and when he fell, he just got in. He had an injury, so it was not like Curtis threw a leg kick and then TKO'd him with leg kicks, and then Austin Aldo had a leg injury. It's like, no, Curtis like knocked him down or whatever. They were on the feet, and then Austin Aldo has freak injury, which puts an asterisk on the win, if you ask me, which is a four-dimensional fold. So, in the fight he's winning, he'd be folding. And this is the guy that I've been a fan of since he was a nobody. This Curtis Blaydes is one of the guys that I watched since what I was just talking about when I said, oh, they're all nobodies in the card. Curtis Blaydes is one of the original guys that I was watching. But I do think Almeida is future champion, and I think he beats him. Almeida, I'm going to go... I'll go Almeida TKO, man. I'm going with the key special on this one. I'm thinking Almeida third round TKO key special.
Hey, you said Blaydes always loses big fights. This is not a big fight. This is like the prelim main event. I'm taking Curtis Blaydes for this fight, man. I think he shows up. I think he uses his wrestling. I think he takes Almeida down, and he uses his classic ground and pound. He's not going to finish Almeida. I say Curtis Blaydes wins this fight by unanimous decision, and he looks good. I just think he's one of those guys that you just can't put in a major spotlight, and I don't think this fight is in a major spotlight. So, yeah, I'm going to take Blaydes in this fight, man. Unanimous decision.
All right, next one. We got Peter Yan versus Song Yadong. Here's how we go.
Easy for me.
This is how we go. Now, Song Yadong dyed his hair blonde. Okay. He dyed his hair blonde. Poirier also shaved his head bald. There's a lot of key symbolisms on this card here. There's a lot of mental warfare that's going on. Now, I really feel like Peter Yan is going to look really good, and he might win this fight. I don't know, man. War Song with the blonde hair? Oh, my God, bro. I don't know, bro. I don't know. You know what? I'm gonna go. Peter Yan wins. He gets a comeback win in, like, a very controversial split decision. That's what I'm going to go. Because I do think either one is very live to win the fight. I think both can beat each other. But the fact that Song Yadong is a beast, and he's a guy that's hungry on the come up. He hasn't been to the mountaintop. He hasn't been the champion. Peter Yan's been the champion. And Song dyed his hair blonde. Fair play, man. I think this fight, I'll go with Yan. I'm not confident in it. You know what I mean? I'm definitely not confident.
I'm going the other way. I'm taking Song Yadong, man. I don't think Peter Yan can do what Corey Sandhagen did to Yadong by taking him down, keeping him down, and making him fight off his back. That's not what Peter Yan is good at. Peter Yan wants to stand and bang. And I think that type of game plan only plays into Song Yadong's hand. I like Song Yadong to win this fight. I don't think he can get Peter Yan up out of there. But I think he can win a split decision in this fight, and I think he won the split decision against what definitely a gay Peter Yan who was on a 3-fight losing streak, who probably, if he loses this fight, he probably most likely will be up out of the UFC, bro. I like Song Yadong to win this fight, split decision.
All right, next one, we got Gilbert Burns versus Jack Della Maddalena. It's an easy one for me. I got Jack Della Maddalena 100%. I think Gilbert Burns, a little bit too old at this point to compete with a guy like this, you know, especially if he goes the way he likes to go, which is, you know, I just want to strike with everybody. If he just wants to strike with Jack Della Maddalena, he's going to lose. And I think that's probably the most likely outcome in the fight is that Burns just wants to stand with Jack Della Maddalena, and he will lose. Obviously, Burns is live for a submission, but I don't see it. I think this is Jack Della Maddalena's time. This is his rise up. I think Jack Della Maddalena wins by unanimous decision.
And I'm going the other way. I think this is a fight where Gilbert Burns realizes that he has to be a well-rounded fighter, that he doesn't want to stand and bang with Jack Della Maddalena, and that he needs to go back to his grappling, his jujitsu. See whether or not Della Maddalena can fight off his back. And if he can't, that's where Gilbert will keep the fight at. I got Gilbert winning via the Keys cousin special. I got Gilbert Burns via third round submission, man.
Next one, we got Kevin Holland versus Michael Page. This is another easy one for me. You can't listen to what anybody's saying for me to be able to make this pick. I got MVP winning this fight. I think this is a layup. Kevin Holland is good, but someone asked me the other day to describe Kevin Holland in one word, and my one word was halfway. I think Kevin Holland is he's a mid-tier fighter, man. He's not a top-tier fighter, but, like, he's better than guys he should be better than. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, he just lost to Wonderboy, who I think is, you know, you could still debate Wonderboy is the best striker in the UFC. That's not a bad loss. Wonderboy is an absolute savage. He's a karate master. He's a savage. But, yeah, I just think MVP, you know, people think that just because he fought in Bellator, that means that, you know, he's not as good as he was because, oh, he was fighting Cans. But, I mean, Kevin Holland isn't that good either, bro. So, I mean, and MVP has such unorthodox, you know, awkward striking that I think he could easily beat Kevin Holland. I'm going to go MVP. I don't know method of victory. I'll probably say MVP, unanimous decision.
Yeah, I got MVP winning this fight also. I think Kevin Holland will give him a tough fight, especially being an MVP doesn't want to he doesn't want to use the mat, something that we know Kevin Holland struggles at. I think this will probably be part of the best striking match of the evening. Both guys can definitely get in there and mix it up for the striking game. Kevin Holland, you know, he's fought some top level guys. He's beaten some, he's lost to some. But early I predicted that Michael Venom Page would start his UFC career 3-0 in 2024. So I have to go with Michael Venom Page winning this fight. And I got him winning via split decision, man. I think Kevin Holland definitely is respected via UFC judges. So, I'm going to say Michael Venom Page wins via split decision.
And next one, here we got Poirier. Yeah, we got Dustin Poirier and Benoit Saint-Denis. Damn, this one is tough, man. I really like Benoit Saint-Denis. This is another guy that, if like what I was saying earlier, if you watch the prelims, like this is a guy that was just on the prelims like a couple cards ago. This was just a guy maybe three cards ago that you would have looked at the card and said, who is that? You know, and you would have said, oh, you know, that card's trash. You would have saw Benoit Saint-Denis, who's that? And now three cards later, he's fighting in the co-main event against Dustin Poirier on one of the biggest cards. Like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, Benoit Saint-Denis is a pay-per-view attraction at this point. You know, or at least he's pretty much a pay-per-view attraction. This one's tough to call, bro. I'm picking Poirier, man. I think, you know, there's a reason why Poirier asked for this fight to be five rounds. I think five rounds favors Poirier. I think Benoit Saint-Denis, even though he's trying to finish you anywhere the fight goes, he is relentless. Poirier's been there before, bro. Poirier fought Khabib. Poirier was the closest anybody's ever been to beating Khabib. He had that guillotine locked in, man. And even Khabib said that it was very tight. You know, Khabib just meant, I don't even remember what happened, but, yeah, Poirier's been in there with all the best guys, man. I think Poirier, five-round Poirier, war Poirier, I think he reminds a lot of people who he is on Saturday, bro. I think so. I've been going Dustin Poirier, unanimous decision.
I'm going with Dustin winning via unanimous decision, even though I have to say I didn't like the way he looked against Justin Gaethje. I thought he let Justin Gaethje press the action, which led to him getting knocked out in the second round. But he is the more experienced fighter. He is the more well-rounded fighter.
Well,
and like
you
said,
you got to think about one thing. You got to think about this too, bro. That fight was in Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City, the same place where Kamaru Usman, you know, in the last 2 minutes of the fight, gets head kicked by Leon Edwards. They're at crazy elevation over in Salt Lake City. So I'm just pointing out that in Poirier's defense, a lot of weird shit happens with type of elevation cards. And it's ironic that 2 years in a row, there was a head kick knockout in the main event of that Salt Lake City card. That was literally the same card a year later. You know what I mean? That was in July. The other one was in August. But it's literally the same. It's the Salt Lake City card the year before. Usman gets head kicked. And then the year later, another head kick, but it's Poirier getting head kicked by one of Usman's training partners, Justin Gaethje. Now, how weird is that?
Yeah, that's weird. But I just think it's something when Dustin asked for this to be a five-round fight. It's something that he sees and that he thinks he has an advantage going into the fourth and fifth rounds. I like Dustin Poirier to win this fight. I'm going to say by unanimous decision. St. Denis isn't going to be an early out or easy win for Dustin, but I do like Dustin to pick up the victory.
And then last one, again, I like so many underdogs in this card. I've never liked so many underdogs on one card, probably since UFC 290, and that one I thought a lot of underdogs could win, and they did. Pantoja won, DDT won, you know, a couple other guys. But, yeah, this one, I think Cheeto can win, but I just don't see it. I think O'Malley, you know, he only just got the belt. Cheeto just doesn't do enough, man. He don't have enough activity for me. It's not talking about, like, his fight. I'm talking about in the fight. I just feel like Cheeto always takes his time, like, versus Cruz. He was doing nothing versus Cruz. Cruz was lighting him up for, like, that whole fight up until Cheeto was just hunting for the one shot and then catches Cruz and knocks him out. But Cruz was winning that whole fight. If anybody remembers, he was winning that whole fight. And then Cheeto versus, was it Munhoz in his last one? Again, like, Cheeto just, he doesn't have a lot of output, man. You know what I mean? He doesn't start fast, like, and I just think O'Malley's going to be more active than him, you know? And I do think O'Malley's probably the better striker as well. You know, I think O'Malley, yeah, I like O'Malley to get it done. Cheeto's never been finished. So I like this one to go the distance as well, and I go O'Malley unanimous decision in a pretty clear, pretty dominant win. Not saying it won't be competitive at all, but I do think it'll be a clear unanimous decision.
I think this is probably going to be the toughest fight of O'Malley's career, man. It's his first time walking out as a champion, the first time where he's going to feel the pressure of being the second guy to walk to the ring, and then he's going against a guy that's beat him before. In the first fight, Cheeto definitely did some things to frustrate him as far as the leg kicks and then being able to fight at distance and stay out of O'Malley's reach. Do I think O'Malley's gotten better? Yes. But do I think he's a well-rounded fighter? No. I think if Cheeto can mix in some wrestling, he'll keep O'Malley in there thinking rather than fighting. But I think this is O'Malley's time, man. You know, every once in a while in the UFC, it becomes a fighter's time. John Jones had his time. Stipe Miocic had his time. Demetrius Johnson had his time. Amanda Nunes had her time. And I think this is Sean O'Malley's time, man. So I got O'Malley winning this fight. I was going to originally say by split decision, but I'm going to say no. He wins in a unanimous decision. O'Malley gets the W and steal.
And there you have it. You know, we had everything. Now we did Moreno Royval 2. We did Gaziev, you know, getting demolished by Rosenstrike. We did Pfeiffer versus Manson. We did, you know, Keys rant on Twitter last week talking about, you know, bros don't want to watch fighters they don't know. And then we just ran through UFC 299 breakdowns and predictions. And you know, I haven't seen all the props, but I'll just give you the one prop. I definitely like Rebelis Despain by KO. Honestly, round one KO is the prop I'm going to be looking at. But him by KO, TKO, I definitely love. And then the round one KO. And then another one that I love that I give y'all this one too. And this one is Jan Antonio Don over 1.5 rounds. I feel like that's all day. I mean, this fight is that fight's going the distance. Jan versus Tong is going the distance. I think 100%. Jan Song over 1.5 for Rebelis Despain, round one KO, and then Rebelis Despain by method of victory KO TKO. I like all three of those. Maybe obviously I'll post a couple more on my Twitter. But yeah, that's where you have it. You know, anything that you want to talk about, add us on Twitter. Any opinions you have anything, let us know. Thank you all for listening. Everybody stay positive. I've been going so hard lately on my stuff. I'm cutting down. I'm cutting 30 pounds. You know what I mean? I'm in the calorie deficit, going hard in the gym. I'm trying to get healthy, you know, and, it doesn't matter if, you know, people say you look good, you want to feel good too on the inside and,
that's right,
you know, feel good and going from A to B and doing things in the day to day too. Mentally and physically, you want to feel good. So I'm trying to do the physical so then that can also help the mental as well. You know what I mean? So, yeah, just stay up on it. Eat your fruit. Stay positive. Thank y'all for listening. Lee, the floor is yours.
Yeah, man. Keep it real sweet, man. Everybody have a good weekend. If you go out and watch the fights, make sure you're being safe. If you plan on drinking, make sure you don't drive. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll be back next Wednesday to break everything down and give you a look ahead for the winners. But as always, Lee and Keys, we always sign off with a peace.